This episode is brought to you by Heidy. Imagine kicking back while a HIPAA-compliant AI scribe writes your soap notes for free. Yes, you heard us right. Heidy is free. I'm Dr. Tom, Heidi's CEO and founder, and we started Heidy to stop clinicians wasting their life on clinical documentation. Heidy transforms your consult babble into crisp, clear soap notes, personalizing itself with every edit. One day, Heidy will be your AI resident, looking through research, explaining plans, and doing anything you don't want to. If you currently pay for an AI scribe in your practice, you should swap to Heidy. We'll even credit you for anything you've already paid. Dive into the description for the link and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town. Sign up and watch Heidy work its magic, all for free, because you've got better things to do.
You spent all this time studying to get into medical school, and then matching into residency and fellowship, and then it's time to land your job or change jobs. You put all this effort into getting there, but you still haven't arrived. There's still a contract to sign. Make sure that contract is as favorable as possible. Stay tuned to find out how. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle.
Welcome back to the podcast. On today's sponsored episode, we have Kyle Clausen, who's the CEO of Resolve. One of the amazing things about Kyle is he's married to an ophthalmologist. And so we love having experts on the show who are married to physicians, so we get their expertise from outside of medicine, but also the perspective of someone who gets what it's like to be a physician and have the issues that we have. We love that here. And he's spent the last decade advocating for physicians and our employment contracts. Thousands of physicians have used Resolve's data, tools, and expertise each year to ensure that we're being treated fairly in those employment contracts. So in addition to being married to said ophthalmologist, he has three kids and a dog. So Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad I got the dog reference on there too, right? Happy to be here and happy to answer some questions for you.
So when I joined my practice, I'm like an anomaly because I joined my practice 12 years ago, almost 13. And the contract I reviewed with a lawyer, as we do, to make sure there was nothing in there that I really shouldn't be signing. But there was really no negotiation. Like, I had already accepted the job. They knew I was all in. So then I lost all leverage unless there was something really egregious in the contract. So in retrospect, what did I do wrong?
Yeah, well, if you're going to negotiate, if you want the opportunity to negotiate, you don't have to. You probably shouldn't go all in. We like to have clients that come to us with multiple offers, right? Because it means that they've got a little bit of leverage. It means they haven't fully made up their mind yet on where they're going. And I don't think you should make up your mind on exactly what practice you're going to join until you've seen the contract, you know what the terms are, compared it side by side with something else, you know what is normal in the industry, you know what fair market value looks like. I mean, all those things go into picking something. You're not the only one, though, that comes in and says, hey, I already signed the letter of intent. I bought the house, right? And now take a look at the contract and negotiate it. We have a lot of clients that do that too, but we certainly prefer you to have some leverage. And so we would encourage you to keep those options open until you know exactly what you're getting into.
So at what point do we engage you? Like at what point when we're looking for work? So whether we're someone who is about to finish residency or fellowship and they're looking, or someone who's considering changing, at what point do we engage with you?
If you're going to look for help, we think it's important to start almost when you start your job search, right? I mean, as soon as you're starting to get verbal discussions happening, I mean, negotiations, right? We get this question about when do negotiations start? They start pretty early on. So I mean, when you're there interviewing, when you're telling them about why you're interested in the position, or they may ask you, right, what are your expectations around pay? They haven't even offered you the job yet. You're giving tells and you're giving them information on how to set the terms. So we think it's important to start educating yourself, getting access to data for sure, and getting access to help if you need it from an attorney earlier than later. 12 months, 9 months prior to taking the job is probably when you're going to start to look at that stuff. If there's any listeners that are international medical grads, you got J1 issues or things like that. I mean, obviously you're starting earlier, 12 to 9 months. It's a little more like 18 months, but it's probably earlier than like.
Yes, that's definitely a lot earlier than I would think, and definitely a lot earlier than I planned for. So you mentioned a couple of things in there I really want to flesh out. You had mentioned like fair market value. How do we know what that is? Because I would imagine, you know, even if you drill down on like your individual state's mean income for that specialty, there's going to be a lot of variability. So how do we find out what fair market value is?
I think it's important to know, you know, what your practice or employer is going to be looking at as a starting point. So usually you're experiencing this, you probably see it maybe from the employer side right now, but there's all these stark rules, there's laws around, right, IRS nonprofit rules around what compensation can look like for positions. Those laws get utilized, in my opinion, the wrong way from employers. They try to use that to push down compensation. So if you see things like MGMA, AMGA, right, there's a lot of these benchmarks that are out there, you know, Sullivan and Cotter, AAMC, that's a pretty decent starting point because your employer is probably going to reference that in the contract for those compliance purposes. If you know what they think is valid, right, on the compliance side, you also should think that's pretty valid for setting your comp and knowing market rates are. That's one set of data that you could look at. The other piece that we think is important and the thing that we're really passionate about is some transparency into the market, you know, meaning what are others being offered? What are they negotiating? What contracts are being presented, you know, to your colleagues? That's information you can find on our website. You know, just create a free account, go on and check out those data points. And then the third data point that I think affects fair market value is what we talked about initially, is hopefully you've got two or three offers in hand. So you know for yourself, right, you've got a snapshot of I'm worth this to these three or four organizations right now, right? It's kind of like getting a comp in the real estate market. If you can look at two practices side by side in the same city or same geographic area, and they have terms that are close but not quite there, I mean, I think that gives you an idea of what you can negotiate and what you can't.
Sometimes some places are faster to get back to you than others, and you might be given a time limit, right? Like, here's your offer. You got to get back to us within 2 weeks or we're going to offer it to someone else. Meanwhile, you're waiting for Hospital B to get back to you and Hospital C still hasn't scheduled your interview. So like when you're dealing with those different timelines, how do you contend with that?
A couple things. I think if you're prepared and you're thinking about this, it's kind of a, you're starting the consultation and the thought process with your interviews. Hopefully you're scheduling those interviews roughly at the same time. Right, you don't want to interview in whatever August and then interview in October and then interview in December, then you're going to run into the exact situation you just described. So hopefully you do your homework, schedule the interviews at roughly the same time, get the offers close to the same time. But that being said, that doesn't happen all the time. If you're getting time pressure from an organization, I think you need to evaluate whether or not you feel like that's a real deadline or if that's artificial, right? They're just telling you that you've got to sign it within 2 weeks because they hope that pressures you into accepting the job. Now,
that's like a sales tactic, right?
It's kind of that buy it now, right? So you have to have it or else it's going to be gone, right? The inventory is out. We know what supply and demand is for physicians. We know there's a shortage. So in most situations, do they have 10 candidates that want to take the job? Probably not.
So they're probably full of it. It's probably a tactic.
Probably. But in some situations, it might be real, right? If you're in San Diego, right? Or a great city, right? Pick your favorite city that you think everybody wants to move to. They may have four or five, right? So I think you've really got to evaluate your situation and know what supply and demand is in that market to know if 2 weeks is really 2 weeks or you have 2 or 3 months.
Actually, with my interview, the CEO that I ended up signing with was such a baller that I had scheduled the interviews too close together and I wasn't going to make it in time using, I forgot my mode of transportation. I think it was going to be using like a cab or public transportation. So he said, just stick around a little longer. I will drive you to your next interview. That's with one of my competitors. I will drive you. That was a baller move. So you know, shout out to my previous CEO, Bob Glazer, for that is completely in line with his personality. I signed with his practice and I've been there ever since. So schedule them close together, but not too close together.
Maybe not that close. Yeah.
Okay. So there are some things that we know we're going to want to negotiate. Price was the first thing that you mentioned off the bat, right? The price, compensation. But what are some of the less obvious points that we really should be focusing on that some physicians that you consult with end up neglecting, forgetting about?
The two outside of compensation that I always think are the most problematic, the one is they fail to look at things that are revolving around termination. Nobody ever thinks they're going to leave the job, right? That you're going into this, you're excited, you're happy to be there. Right? It's your favorite spot.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, yeah.
Yeah, but then there's this thing called the non-compete, right, that nobody likes, or there's no definition on tail coverage and you have no idea what tail coverage even is because you've never had to buy your own insurance before. The termination points, right, have a lot of value to them. Non-competes are extremely problematic, right? If you ever want to work in the same geographic area post-termination. So the whole topic would be one. The second area that I think causes some burnout issues actually would be anything around scheduling, duties, responsibilities, right? But where do I work? When do I work? How much call am I taking? Those things are usually, I mean, you can tell me you've been through the process, but usually heavily discussed in the interview. What does this job look like? And then you get to the contract and it's like one paragraph that says, you're going to work whenever we tell you to, and, you know, kind of like everybody else. And there's really no definition around it at all. And so if the CEO, great example on your end, right, moves on, right? So the guy that hired you is no longer there. The new guy comes in and says, great, your contract says I can tell you when to work whenever I want to. That's probably, you know, not a good spot to be in. So you try to prevent things like that, kind of the unforeseen issues that might pop up.
But you want to also be a good citizen, right? Like, you don't want to be like, well, I don't want to work weekends and I don't want to work nights and I want a lot of vacation, right? You're like, I came in to work hard and take care of my patients, right? How do you straddle that?
Yeah, I think you have to be careful. You can't come in and say, hey, I'm not taking any call, right? If everybody else in the group is taking call, right? You're probably not going to get the job. They may walk away from that discussion. But I also think we have clients that come in and say, hey, I can only take the position if I have to have Fridays off because I've got a spouse that whatever works, or it just doesn't work for childcare, whatever the reason is. So if that's a deal breaker for you.
Loves 3-day weekends.
Yeah, it'd be great. You and the practice should know about that right now, right? We shouldn't leave that up in the air. It shouldn't be a, well, they said it might be okay in the interview and I never really flushed it out more. And now different and I'm unhappy. Retention is important, right? And recruiting is expensive. Practice certainly wants to make sure you're clear on what you're getting into. We don't advise people to ask for every single thing, right? That would be perfect, but you got to protect yourself too.
In the world of medicine, where every decision can change lives, your peace of mind is crucial. This is where Pattern steps in. Imagine insurance made simple, fast, and personalized just for you. With Pattern, you're not just getting disability and life insurance, you're ensuring your future and protecting your greatest asset, your income. In the past 10 years, Pattern has transformed the way over 20,000 doctors secure their financial well-being. Discover the simplicity of securing your future at patternlife.com or click the link in the description.
Now, you had mentioned non-competes, right? Non-competes, restrictive covenants. You're a lawyer, so I can ask you the legal question, right? So what is going on with the legality of non-competes and restrictive covenants? Just, and another plug for my practice, we got rid of it. We got rid of it. We're saying, if you're going to join our practice, we're confident you're going to stay here. We're confident you're not going anywhere else. And we're also confident that even if you do, it's not going to be damaging for us.
That's a great attitude, right? I mean, that's the attitude we wish everybody would have. What non-competes are, just a quick overview on that. It says, if this relationship ends, doesn't matter who ends it, if we let you go, we fire you, or we don't offer you partnership, or you just quit, you can't work within, let's say, 5 miles for 2 years. So if that's the case, that's obviously bad for the individual. It's good for the organization. Some states have said for physicians, we don't allow that, right? So like California and a few others have said, you can't have a non-compete on physicians. We think that healthcare is too important. Patients have a right to see their physician wherever they want to. A few other states have followed that. The FTC, though, right now, obviously having discussions on should we allow restrictive covenants or non-competes at all, right, across the entire country. They started that conversation, you know, in January of 2023. We're going to give us a decision in April. Then they pushed it back. Now it's maybe April of 2024. And so at this point in time, there's no ban on them, right? I think that's misinformation. Sometimes in the physician communities, people think you can't enforce them. You absolutely can. You need to be really careful on them. If that changes, great. But if not, just focus on your contract.
Make sure it's in your contract. Yeah. Yeah. And something that I heard when we were talking about, you know, when private equity was in the process of buying up all the practices, one thing that I said is have it so that if your practice gets bought by another practice, any restrictive covenant is moot because I signed up for your practice, not whatever the next iteration of your practice is. So if you can try and get something like that in.
Yeah. Exclusions are really important.
So are there any other points for negotiation that like end up making maybe or a smaller deal for hospitals or practices, but are actually a big deal for physicians?
For early physicians, you know, for sure, people moving, we often see some flexibility around those initial, like, you know, relocation, signing bonus type things where it's the amount of cash to the practice or the hospital is not that large. You know, an extra $10,000 might make a huge impact on cash flow for a resident.
When you're moving and you have no money and no way to cover first month's rent and last month's rent and all that.
Yeah. So, you know, when we talk about what to negotiate, I mean, obviously our job is to do what the client wants, right? Every negotiation is different. Everything should be customized to you. But if you're looking for where can I extract some value that has an immediate impact to my family and, you know, a small impact to the organization, I would say some of those upfront bonuses are really helpful. Same thing with like licensing, right? The DEA fees, all that initial stuff when you don't have cash flow really helps.
Awesome. Awesome. Is it a zero-sum game? Like, is this negotiation? Are we looking to, like, come out a winner?
I'm going to say yeah. I mean, you are. So, I mean, the win on both sides is physicians drive almost all of the revenue in a health system. Healthcare is now almost 20% of our GDP. You guys are like the linchpin, right, of all this, right? The win for them is they get somebody in that's going to drive more revenue than they pay you. There's a lot of discussion around physicians are losing health systems money and all that stuff.
We're losing health systems money? We are the product.
I agree, but they're going to frame it as we're losing money on your practice and all this stuff. They don't account for technical fees or facility fees or all those surgery charges and all that stuff. They keep in a separate bucket, so it looks like the physician services are down, right? So remember, you're bringing a lot of value to the organization. That's the win that they're getting. The win for you is, obviously, personally, you have to protect yourself and your family. You want to be paid fairly. You want to have flexibility long-term. Like you said, if PE comes in and buys them out or health systems merge, right? There's new leadership that comes in. It can be a win, but it may not feel like that throughout the process.
Got it. Okay. So it might feel like you need to exert your leverage in order to get those wins, but ultimately they win too if they hire you because we're the prize. And I think we lose sight of that when we're medical students, residents, and fellows, because there are a ton of us scrapping for very few positions. And as soon as we're done, that is completely different, right? Tons of positions, very few physicians out there. I shouldn't have chosen words that sounded so similar, position to physician. Very many jobs and very few physicians to fill them. And so we're the prize. And after having it drilled into us that we're not, that we're the gum on somebody's shoe during our training, right? It's really hard to recognize that we are that revenue driver that you're referring to. So I think we need to remember that we're in that position. So are there any other, I know we've talked about some already, but you know, I've kind of formed this as a different question. Are there any contract must-haves that we haven't discussed yet?
You know, the only one that we haven't really talked about that's becoming a bigger deal, and we're on a physician-led podcast right now, so I feel like it's very applicable, is side gigs, right? Outside activities, outside interests, outside of medicine. We see this as an area that's increasing, right, by our clients saying, hey, I want to do some of this stuff. I want to work for a, you know, health tech company, and I want to be a medical director, an advisor, a consultant. I want to be an expert witness. I want to just moonlight, right, just traditional locum work. Most contracts are going to start out saying you can't do that unless they give you permission. And so if you want to keep your intellectual property, if you want to do all the things right outside of the contract that you should be able to, you need to be really careful on that, both outside activities and intellectual property, to make sure you can keep that.
Yes. As a person who advocates for side gigs, does side gigs, is currently on the side gig right now. Yes. Agreed. Because I can only see that expanding. It's only going to expand, right? What can you teach us about the art of negotiation, right? Like, is there anything to be learned from like hostage negotiators, right? Who want to become your best friend so then they can convince you to spill the beans on whatever. Like, is there anything to be learned about the art of negotiation so we can bring that to the table? Or do we just leave that to you? We're like, I'm going to be your best friend, but speak to Kyle, you know, and he's going to negotiate for me.
Yeah, I think there's some of that's important. I mean, I think it's more important in a hostage negotiation, right, than it is in a employment setting, obviously. I think you're dealing with different people, different topics. But, you know, I think it is helpful, right, for some personalities to step out and to step away from it and to bring somebody else in. I mean, whether it's us or any other, right, I mean, good healthcare attorney that's out there, just because physicians have been, like you said before, generally have had to compete for positions. They don't feel like they're empowered. They like to hear, right, or have conflict in the conversation. So if they say, hey, no, we can't do that, sorry, you know, a lot of it's, oh, okay, right, no big deal. Like, this is just the way that it'd be. If that's your personality type, yeah, I think stepping out of it or just saying, hey, I understand, I've hired somebody to help on this is really important. But I will tell you that we have organizations that we talk to on a regular basis that they will play hardball. And so if they feel like throughout that interview process or because you signed a letter of intent or you've shown other things that you're committing to this job, they'll hold the line sometimes and say no, right, to everything because they know you're committed. And then we'll have a candidate come in 6 months later who's got three or four options on the table and says, hey, if you don't take this out, I'm walking. And then all of a sudden, magically, right, the paragraph can get taken out. So you have to know that these contracts aren't standard. I mean, they're going to tell you they are, most get changed. And I think the biggest tip I would give you on the art of negotiation is have multiple offers. Give yourself that option to fall back on.
So don't make the mistake that I made. Go early, contact Kyle early, early and often. Is there anything that we could do to make ourselves like a more attractive candidate? So like during the interview, for instance, during the interview process, right? Like pick up on things that they're looking for so that when it comes to the negotiation, we have a little more insight into some of the needs that we might have, like looking for people to be on committees or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, every employer wants, a physician who won is going to be engaged, right? So you mentioned committees or being, directorships or some other, roles that are there. They generally want people that are going to work hard, that are going to produce, right? Are willing to see patients, are willing to work, kind of that 1.0, or more, that are going to take call. They certainly want you to give off the, aura, I guess, of being interested in being there long-term. Now, whether you're interested in being there long-term or not is completely different, but I you have to go in saying, yes, I'm looking for a job for my career, right? I don't want to year for 2 years or 3 years because retention's expensive. And so I think that would be my tip and suggestion is don't focus on money in the interview, right? Focus on the job, what it's going to look like, what you can do to help them, what they're needing, right? In return, what their long-term vision is. And if you can sell them on you being the right candidate for that, then you can come back, when it gets to the dollars and just say, hey, I just want to be paid fairly, right? Now, you may, fairly just means whatever fair is, and then we can go look at the data and make sure that I'm at that right number. And the market changes, right? So when Mahomes gets a new contract, right, all of a sudden all the quarterbacks get paid more. The market changes for physician services too. And I can promise you when, fee schedules come out and change and they want to push comp down, they'll come to you right away and say, oh, the market changed. And so you got to do the same thing for yourself. So that would be my tips on kind of that interview early process is just don't focus on the money until you have sold them on you.
Does that happen where like Medicare cuts our compensation and the hospital's like, oh, looks like Medicare cut your reimbursement. So we're going to have to cut with you too.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're now seeing organizations draft in language that just says we can automatically adjust compensation, right, based on fair market value. And so if CMS comes in and cuts, right, reimbursement or the RVU schedules change, which happened, right, we still have organizations that want to use a 2020 fee schedule because of the RVU issues. They absolutely will come in with amendments and say, here's the new comp plan, right? You're going to sign off on that. And, I've got a client right now that it's about a $22,000 hit, right, for a family medicine position, which is a big deal. I mean, it's over 10% of the comp. And so nobody wants to go backward mid-contract. So you've got to be careful on if the contract allows them to do that or not without a full renegotiation.
What about like cost of living expenses, inflation, things like that? Is that, that get baked in?
Usually not. Most places are going to, try to keep you at the rate, right? Because a lot of specialties go the other way too, right? I mean, if you look at trend lines in the data, compensation generally goes up. But they're going to try to keep you in that locked in rate for 3, 4, 5 years if they can, unless you're the one raising your hand saying, hey, it's time to renegotiate.
Yeah. And when can you do that? Is it when you're ready to leave?
I think it depends. So most contracts are set up with what I would call very short without cause termination provisions in them, meaning 2 to 3 months and you can leave, right? 60, 90, 120 days. So what that means is you're in a 3 month revolving contract. So at any point in time, really, you can renegotiate if market, tells you you're underpaid.
For anyone who's considering changing, I would recommend listening to this episode twice. There's really a ton of stuff in here. So Kyle, really, I appreciate you taking your time to educate us. I think having listened to this, we're all better negotiators. I don't know if we're going to be able to negotiate like when it's not my turn to do the dishes or the laundry or something like that. But as far as our compensation, which accounts for, a lot of our livelihood here, time spent, and then job satisfaction. I appreciate all that you're doing for physicians. And I'm sure your wife appreciates it as well, being an ophthalmologist.
I hope so. Appreciate you having me on.
So if people want to find you, if they want to get in touch with you, and you said you had some free services on your website, where do we find your website? What's available there? And how do we get in touch?
Yeah. So if you go to resolve.com and you just create a free account, you'll get access to contract calculators. So you can go in and see what a normal non-compete should look like, right? You can kind of plug in your details and get a score back, for yourself. There's free salary data on there. If you need access to more data and paid services or attorney services, you can do that too. Everything's flat feed. It's transparent. And so resolve.com is where you want to go for that.
Resolve.com. Kyle Clausen, resolve.com. Thank you again.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again from Heidi. Elevate your practice with a free AI scribe, zero cost, HIPAA compliant, and time saving. Ready to swap? We've got you covered for past AI scribe expenses. Head to HeidiHealth.com, get started, and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you. This is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.